is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, September 13th, 2023. And today will be better than yesterday. Working from back in Connecticut is Sarah Abbott. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in Montana. And Taylor Schwenk is so excited about today's podcast. Taylor, would you agree with that? Because we got one of your guys as guest.
Oh, yeah. Ben McDonald, friend of the pod, has been on the pod before, but I don't think since the Orioles have been so successful on the field. I got to meet him, you know, thanks to you in the booth after the game at Camden Yards, but a real treat to have him on, and I think he's going to have some good stuff to say. I think the listeners are going to like this interview.
Well, and look, we're obviously going to ask about the Orioles, who look like they have a chance to have the best record in the American League. They're leading in that right now. They might win 100 games, but you have questions about critters. Like, you sent over your list of questions you want me to ask him, and right off the top, it's what's the most dangerous animal that you caught with your bare hands or something like that?
Well, he's awesome on social media because I think he took some time off and went to Louisiana, posted a picture of himself with a giant poisonous snake like by the tail. I watched him in a video.
It's called a rattlesnake.
Well, I don't know if it was a rattlesnake, Buster?
Yes, we do. I texted with Ben about it.
Okay, confirmed. But I saw a video of him wrangling an armadillo and looked like a Sonic parking lot or something. Like with his bare hands, it was incredible. So we have to ask him about his critter adventures.
Yeah, we're also going to be talking with Bob Nightingale. One of the questions I'm going to ask him is Mike Trout going to be traded during the course of this offseason? We'll have to see about that. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live. And the hottest ticket, without a doubt, these days, the Braves and the Phillies, two teams who feel like are destined to face each other in the National League playoffs. Matt Olson reached a milestone in the top of the fourth inning on Tuesday night.
Here's the pitch on the way from Wheeler. That'll be hit well to left field. Pache back to the wall. This has got a shot, and there is the tying home run for Matt Olson. That is his 51st home run, and he has tied Andrew Jones for the most homers in franchise history.
That from 680, the Fan. And another guy who's hitting a lot of benchmarks this season, went deep in the fifth.
There goes the runner. The pitch swung on, belted. That's headed for the upper tank and off the facing of the second deck. Home run, Ronald. Braves take a 3-1 lead. And for Ronald, his 37th home run of the year. Yeah, boo that.
That was Joe Simpson on 680, the Fan. Boo that. Braves win the game 7-6. The Dodgers and the Padres and Freddie Freeman celebrated a birthday yesterday, and he has a habit of doing something on his birthday.
Dodgers 1-0. We're in the bottom of the third. Walker delivers. Here's a fly ball into left center field. It's a long run, and it is gone. Happy birthday to you. Freddie Freeman with his 26th home run of the year goes the other way, and the Dodgers now have a 3-0 lead.
That was Charlie Steiner, 570 a.m. LA Sports. The final score there was 11-2. The Guardians beat the Giants with help from Tyler Freeman.
Walker delivers, and it's swung on, line drive, base hit center field. This will score two. Naylor's across. Right behind him is Fry. He slides in safely. Into third goes Calhoun, and out at second base after a single that drives in two. Tyler Freeman moved up on the throw, and the Guardians take a 3-1 lead.
Jim Rosenhaus and WTIM 1100. That would be the final score, 3-1. The Cubs were in Colorado, game two of their series. Pete Crow Armstrong made incredible catches in this game, but in the end, it was an ex-Cub who had a decisive hit.
1-1 to Bryant, and that's hit well the gap in left center. It's got a chance. It is gone! Chris Bryant, a laser shot to left center field. The former Cub breaks the tie. 5-4 Rockies.
Yeah, from 850 KOA, the Rockies win that game 6-4. The Cincinnati Reds, trying to catch the Cubs and other National League wildcard contenders, took the lead in the top of the 10th.
pitch. Line drive, right center field. That's a base hit. Around third is Marte. Here comes the throw to the plate. Tag, not in time. The throw was towards the third base side. The catcher went to get it, but Marte actually slid past him and just missed the tag and scores, and the Reds have a 6-5 lead.
That from 700 WLW, the Reds would close out the Tigers in the bottom of the 10th inning for the victory. The Brewers playing great these days, and a newcomer got it done in the bottom of the fourth.
First pitch to Donaldson. He is a high fly deep left field. Back goes De La Cruz. Bye-bye baseball. Josh Donaldson, the bringer of rain, brings it here at American Family Field, and the Brewers have a 2-1 lead.
That from 620 WTMJ, and it being the Brewers, that was all the runs that the Marlins would score. The final score there was 3-1. Bob Nightingale has some strong thoughts about what the Brewers might do in the postseason. The Rays play center fielder Jose Siri on the injured list with a fractured right hand. Another loss of a player for the Tampa Bay Rays, who during the course of the season have lost Shane McClanahan, Wander Franco, and yet they just keep on rolling along. On Tuesday night, though, they would lose basically because of a hit in the bottom of the seventh inning for Minnesota.
Stretch and the pitch. A swing and a line drive. Right center field deep. This one's got carry. Back towards the wall. That is gone. Home run, Willie Castro. Went down and just golfed that two-out pitch for a go-ahead two-run homer. And the Twins, one swing of the bat, have a 3-2 lead.
That from the Treasure Island Baseball Network. The Twins win the game 3-2. And along the way, the Rays lost another player. Yandy Diaz had to leave this game because of an injury. The Rangers face the Blue Jays. Max Scherzer on the mound for Texas. And in the bottom of the sixth inning, he had to come off the field.
Mike Maddux is coming off the field. Matt Lucero is coming off the field. And now finally, Max Scherzer is coming off the field. I couldn't tell from his body language what he was going to do there. Certainly, after lifting his leg in what was going to be a warm-up pitch, he shook his head and said no.
Yeah, and he told reporters after the game that he's going to have an MRI on his right bicep after experiencing some tightness there. Bruce Bochy told reporters that they just weren't going to let him continue based on how he was feeling. That from 105.3, the Fan. The Rangers would hold on to win that game, though, beating the Blue Jays 6-3 and helping them in the American League playoff chase. The Astros playing at home against the Oakland Athletics. We talked earlier, or what was it, last week about how the Astros have really struggled at home this year. That continued on Tuesday night.
Now here's the pitch, and Kemp hits a drive into right, and Tucker's going back on this at the track, leaping at the wall, and it is gone. Tony Kemp is homered on the first pitch of the fifth inning. A leaping attempt by Tucker in right field couldn't bring it back. And the Athletics have taken a 5-1 lead.
That from the A's cast, the A's will win that game 6-2. The Mariners face the Angels. The Angels completely falling apart down the stretch, and J.P. Crawford finished them off in the bottom of the fourth inning on Tuesday night.
The 2-1 pitch on the way to Crawford, swinging a fly ball into the gap in right center field. Phillips on the run, reaches out, kicking to it, and it's on the track and off the wall and a hop. Grant scores, Moore scores. Here comes Haggerty rounding third. He scores. Everybody scores. J.P. Crawford in at second with a two-out double, clears the bases.
Yeah, so for the Seattle Mariners, an 8-0 win against the Angels. Seattle taking care of business there. And one final news note, David Stearns was hired to run baseball operations for the New York Mets. That's one of the topics I'm going to be talking about coming up with Bob Nightingale of USA Today. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, the College Game Day podcast, humming along. You can watch it on YouTube. You can listen on the app that you're listening to this show right now. We got a good one today. We got Reese off the top by himself. Then we got Bill Connolly. I know I say Reese by himself. That doesn't sound super exciting, but Reese is a talented broadcaster. And when he goes on these monologues, they're a lot of fun to listen to. So check it out. Picks Pod on Friday as well with Stanford Steve, the College Game Day podcast.
Bob Nightingale covers baseball for USA Today. Bob, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Buster. Thanks.
As you and I are talking, you are standing doing a Zoom call. I can't remember anybody I've ever talked to on a Zoom call since the beginning of the pandemic. who's standing doing this. So where, how did you land on that?
Just me and these are feeling slouched over or something like that. Let me stand up, be energized, everything else. So no, I always stand up.
Yeah, man. And do you have a chair there that you, you know, eventually, if my questions wear you down here, that you'll be able to, or you know, can you hang in there?
No, I got a couple bar stools here, so I do.
Okay. So last night in the Rangers game, Max Scherzer winds up walking off. The Rangers win the game. But I think at this point with Scherzer, you just never know, right? With bicep, or are you confident that he's going to pitch?
Well, what he said is going to have an MRI, so we'll see what happens. It's a scary thing at his age. He knows his body so well. That'd be a huge blow to the Rangers, who have, you know, finally got out of their funk they were in. And now, you know, back in the race, I'd love to see them in the playoffs. I'd love to see Bruce Bochy back in postseason, you know, like you would. So hopefully they get back in there. Now they're starting to get guys healthy, and hopefully Scherzer can still pitch.
Yeah, it's interesting. Whenever teams get aggressive, you know, we in the media always applaud them. And I think rightly so, because, you know, in this era in which you see a handful of teams tanking every year, you've got the Rangers from beginning of last winter, really the previous winter, where they are making clear that they were going to do what they could to get into the playoffs. But when you look back at, you know, what they've done in the last year, they've taken a lot of risks on guys with long injury history. And you know the old saying in baseball, you know, the biggest predictor for, you know, future injuries are past injuries. And they kind of blew past that in some of the choices that they made.
They did, you know, and, you know, Eovaldi's been, you know, injured over the course of his career. But, you know, he got injured again this year. They weren't the same without him. You know, now he's back. Yeah, obviously you're not going to have DeGrom for another year. Took those gambles, you know, and some of the big free agent things have turned out. A lot of these free agents don't turn out. Theirs did with both Seager and Semien. So, you know, they're all in. So it's nice to see a team get rewarded that's, you know, going to be aggressive at the trade deadline, aggressive in the free agent market.
In the end, do you think they wind up making the postseason in this race where it feels like it's basically, you know, three teams for two spots?
I do. I think they edge out Seattle and Mariners. I still think Seattle made a mistake by trading away Sewald. You know, you trade away your closer, and they have lost about seven or eight games now in late innings. I mean, they almost traded away Teoscar Hernandez. They're listing other things. So they weren't really going all in. They just, but, you know, by trading away their closer, you know, we saw that, you know, hurt them a couple of years ago when they traded Kendall Graveman to Houston. Disastrous, obviously, with the Milwaukee Brewers last year with Josh Hader. It's tough just to get rid of a closer and think you can survive.
So yesterday we get word that the Mets have hired David Stern to be the president of baseball operations, a really expensive investment. You know, I had one executive, and I don't know what David Stern's going to be making with the Mets, but I had an executive with another team ask the question as the Mets were going through this process, you know, would they be willing to pay Stearns at the going rate for someone in his with his experience, his success of $7 to $10 million? I guess, you know, it's interesting. I talked to someone in the Mets organization yesterday about the last month and how the Mets have kind of slogged along a little bit, and that Steve Cohen's perspective is, I don't know if I don't want to watch this for 2 years. So he's being aggressive here, right? He's kind of going, this is like, getting David Stearns is like him going out and getting Scherzer and Verlander for the pitching staff.
Yeah, it's like the worst-kept secret in baseball. I mean, everybody knew that he was going to end up there. You know, Cohen wanted him badly. And the other owners said he's going there. It's funny, the trade deadline, it also looked like it had his, you know, fingerprints all over it. You know, by trading Scherzer, by trading Verlander, by shopping Pete Alonso. It's almost like, hey, these are moves that David Stearns will be making. So, yeah, I got to think he's making at least, you know, over $30 million. That's a going rate for, you know, prized executives. So, you know, I think Steve Cohen is saying, wait a minute now, this guy built a perennial contender with a small payroll. You know, what can he do with us who have a huge payroll? So I think it's a great hire. I think this guy's will be right back in it in about 2 years.
And as you reported yesterday, he's getting a 5-year deal. It's interesting because some of the reaction around baseball was, boy, he did not end on good terms necessarily with the Brewers. They could have held it out a little bit longer, yes?
Yeah, they could wait till the end of the season instead of waiting until after the trade deadline. I think Mark Antanasio was, you know, a little irritated a couple of years ago when he blocked Stearns from going or interviewing. And, you know, Stearns obviously wanted to be interviewed. He wanted to look at other opportunities. Now, last year, you know, you hear different things. The Josh Hader thing blew up in their face. We heard Mark Antanasio was very upset. Hey, you should have a better read about your clubhouse. I mean, that clubhouse melted down. And they never should have traded Hader. They should have known the repercussions of the trade deadline. And when you have a guy like, you know, Devin Williams, who's giving me this, who's a setup guy, now he's giving me the closer making big time money. And when he's more upset about it than anybody, you've got some problems. So who knows if there was a fallout there. But right when the season ended, Stearns was the one who said, yeah, I just want to be consultant now, strip away my title.
So it's interesting to me because obviously in getting David Stearns, you're getting someone who has experience running baseball operations. My sense after watching Cohen work for a few years that in effect, he is the head of baseball operations. It feels like because he's more involved than a lot of owners are where, you know, you'll see general managers, you see head of baseball ops, essentially take recommendations of the owner that are going to be rubber stamped. A lot of owners will keep away from it. I feel like that it's pretty clear Cohen's very much involved and he's just looking for, you know, guys who can help to steer him down the best path. Is that fair or do you think I'm overstating it?
I don't think he's involved as, say, a Jim Crane is with Houston. I think Antanasio is very involved with Milwaukee. So we'll see. I think the Pete Alonso thing will be intriguing because I think if they do trade him, hey, you know that's David Stearns running the show. If they keep him, I'm one of his Steve Cohen saying, I'm not sure if I want that backlash from the fans, the media, and everything else.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, with Alonso, it's pretty clear from the fact that they didn't get a deal done last offseason. It's pretty clear they're miles apart in whatever talks they had. And it comes down in this era whether or not the Mets organization values power numbers in the way that, you know, Pete's camp is going to value it. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens next with the San Diego Padres. They get blown out by the Dodgers last night. It's over. They're not going to make the playoffs. What's next for the Padres, Bob?
I think, you know, I think they're going to let Bob Melvin go. And I think if they let Bob Melvin go, nobody's going to be happier than Bob Melvin. I think that thing is just such a mess there. And I think Bob Melvin will end up managing somewhere next year. I really do. I think Ryan Flaherty will be the next manager there. You know, just like four different managers that A.J. Preller's had. The owner, Peter Sadler, is very close to Preller. Preller's got a contract through 2026. But I think this will go down as the most entertaining team in baseball history, not just this season. I think it's just a disaster what happened there. There's no team that's ever had this kind of talent and, you know, perform this well individually, be this bad.
So you mentioned about Bob Melvin. I agree with you. I think one way or the other, they have to figure that out because the relationship there is not great between the front office and between Bob. What teams could you see Bob landing with next year? We know that there was talk before the Mets hired Buck Showalter the last round that maybe the Mets would be a possible landing spot for him.
He likes New York, yeah. I mean, I can see that. If something happened there in Boone, I mean, I think Boone's safe, but if something happened there, I can see him going there. You know, hey, why not Milwaukee? I think Craig Council's stepping down. Why not go there? Why not go to Cleveland, replace Francona? There are some good job opportunities open this year.
All right. Alek Manoah is not going to pitch again for the Blue Jays this year. We've gotten word that he's getting some testing on his knee and other parts of his body. But the part that, you know, just doing reporting the last couple of days, and I think Ben Wagner, who the Blue Jays broadcaster, was the first to detail the fact that basically Manoah was sent down to the minor leagues. He disagreed with it, and he basically was never involved with the AAA team. And I just, you know, and what I heard yesterday and the day before and doing some reporting on this was, man, Alek Manoah, he was faced with the same circumstance that so many players have. They get sent down to the minor leagues and they might be upset about the decision, but eventually they report and they go about the work of trying to prove the team wrong. I don't know what good it would do for Alek Manoah to not go down and pitch in AAA and begin the process of trying to work his way back. What'd you make of all that?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, why didn't Toronto, step down and say, hey, you don't show up, you're not getting paid. You're going to lose your entire contract here. We're going to suspend you. So, you know, who's running the show here? I'm not sure why they allowed this. Obviously, you know, the offseason is going to be big. You know, do they trade him? Do they try to get his head right? You know, what kind of value does he have? But I can't believe he just refuses to go, and then he gets paid at the same time. It's been a mess. It's amazing what a drop-off it's been. It kind of reminds you of the, Romero years ago when he was going good? Yeah, just fell apart. This reminds you of the same thing.
Yeah, and I think there is a perception around the Blue Jays. I know some players there who believe that to some degree that the players have too much autonomy, that there needs to be a harder response from the organization and a higher standard in terms of how they go about their business on a daily basis. You reported earlier this week that the Angels are going to be open to talking about Mike Trout. If Trout were to bring them the idea that he might want to get traded, some of the feedback I got, Bob, after your report came out the other day from teams was, boy, he would be a hard guy to trade because, as you know, he's missed over 200 games the last three seasons. He should be unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame when he becomes eligible. But at age 32 and with about $250 million owed to him over the next 7 years, if the Angels would move him, they would have to eat a ton of money, yes?
No, I'm with you. It certainly doesn't have the same trade value. We'll see if he wants to go. It's entirely up to him. He's told reporters a couple of weeks ago, I want to talk to front office. So if he wants out, they'll say, okay, we'll see what's out there. But you're right. He's got about $250 million coming over 7 more years. He's missed so much time the last few years. He needs to have a full season just to regain his trade value if he wants to go. And I don't think he wants to go. I mean, he decided to stay in the first place. He's very comfortable there. I just think he's frustrated right now by him giving out those comments like, let me talk to the front office.
All right. I've been saying on the podcast in recent weeks that I think the Braves and the Phillies are, the Phillies are the most dangerous team to the Atlanta Braves. And Brian Snitker, their manager, was quoted yesterday that the Phillies scare the heck out of them. But another team that you think should scare the heck out of everybody, the Milwaukee Brewers. How come?
Just with that pitching, we saw it these last 3 days. Corbin Burns should have had a no-hitter. Brandon Woodward had a 9-inning shutout. Freddie Peralta pitched lights out. Three of them was like an 0.38 ERA. And that's how you win the playoffs. I think if there's one sleeper team out there, one team that can knock off Atlanta potentially, would be them. And, of course, they got, Devin Williams in the bullpen as their shutdown closer. So that team scares me. Philadelphia, I mean, obviously, they play the game hard. They play the game right. I was saying the other day, if the San Diego Padres had the Phillies makeup and character, they would have won 110 games this year. Yeah. But, Phillies are, what's about. I love being around that team. It's kind of an old school, old soul team. And, man, they play hard.
Yeah, and I love, it's fun during this Phillies and Braves series, you could tell the respect between the two teams. I love that scene the other night when, Matt Olson hit the home run, his 50th, and it was Kyle Schwarber who went out and did the negotiating for the ball, going and coaxing a fan into trading, ball for ball. That was, you can feel that. If that series were to take place, in the National League Championship Series, Division Series, whatever it is, that would be epic.
It would be. I mean, two unbelievable fan bases. I think last year, Philadelphia caught Atlanta by surprise there. They had the layoff. Atlanta, let's see about that starting rotation. We'll see a little bit about that bullpen, too, is shaky. Of course, the Phillies bullpen is shaky as well. But, two teams, two great fan bases. And you look at Phillies, guys like Bryce Harper, Schwarber, epitomize what Phillies double is all about. Just that blue-collar work ethic is perfect place for both those guys.
And the Braves just rolling along. They keep hitting homers. It looks like they have a real chance to break the all-time home run record for any team, which is 307 by the 2019 Twins. All right, Bob, good to talk with you as always.
My pleasure. Thank you, Buster. Take care of yourself.
Ben McDonald is an analyst for Orioles games as well as for college games on ESPN. Ben, how you doing?
Doing good, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. And back in the day, I covered Ben when he was with the Orioles. He was on that team in 1995 when Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record. And I must tell you, Ben, that the producer of the show, Taylor Schwenk, one of the producers, he is a huge Orioles fan. So a lot of times when I do some of these interviews, he won't send me notes because he figures that I got it. today, knowing that you're coming on, he's got some major notes he sent me. It was like 3 pages long. Okay.
He's got you prepared, ready to roll, huh?
I couldn't have you flying blind, Buster.
Well, and the first line that he has for me, question to ask you, what's the most dangerous animal you think you could catch with your hands?
Oh, wow. The most dangerous? I think an alligator's going to be towards the top of the list because I've done that a few times. And
How long are those alligators?
It could go wrong. I think the biggest one I ever caught barehanded was just shy of seven feet. And that's a pretty big one for barehanded, you know. I caught an armadillo recently. Everybody made a lot to do out of it. It's not much danger with the armadillo. It's just that they're very hard to catch. I mean, they're low to the ground, kind of like Robert Newhouse back in the day. You know, they could really go low to the ground. And so, yeah, I always like catching up and sneaking up on certain things and catching them.
All right. I got to hear the story about catching the 7-foot alligator. But before that, you mentioned Robert Newhouse. It's so funny. Last year, Joe Girardi was talking, before he was let go by the Phillies, was talking about one of his players, Gene Segura. And he looked at us in a group and he goes, you know, he kind of reminds me of that old running back for the Cowboys, Robert Newhouse. And you knew exactly what he was talking about, right? I thought it was a perfect comp.
Yeah. People always say, man, you're from Louisiana. How could the Cowboys be your favorite team? But as a kid, when I was growing up, the Saints were so bad. And really the next closest team were the Cowboys. And I just fell in love with Staubach and Dorsett and Billy Joe Dupree and Ed Too Tall Jones and Randy White and all those guys, Robert Newhouse, that became my team. And obviously there's not been a lot to cheer for about the Cowboys in recent years. So it was a good start to the year. We'll see what happens.
All right. What would compel you to jump on a 7-foot alligator?
You know, to be honest, it's just something we grew up doing years ago, buddies of mine. It began in junior high and on into high school where we'd go out at night on a boat around the duck camp and out on the river in the bayous where we grew up. And we weren't the first ones to do it. Obviously, our dads before us started doing these kinds of things. And we just started trying to catch alligators. And look, never the big ones, right? I mean, they get really big. They could get 12-foot long down in Louisiana. That's not the kind you mess with. But we grew up catching anywhere, you know, the 2-footers to up to 7-foot were the ones. And it was kind of like of a challenge kind of thing. You're riding around at night. You got the Q-beam spotlight. And an alligator's eyes go red at night. Like they're ruby red at night. That's how you know it's an alligator. So you just kind of ease up on them in the boat. You get them in the bow of the boat. An alligator gets in shallow water at nighttime. That's when they're typically feeding. They're more of a nocturnal animal. And so we would just jump off the boat and catch them and take a picture with them and let them go or whatever. And so it's just something we grew up. Now, obviously, when sports became a figure for me kind of in high school and I started excelling at basketball, baseball, football, and on into college and, of course, with the Orioles, I did cut back a lot of that craziness stuff. I'd go with my buddies. I still would catch occasional, but not like they did, just for the obvious reason. Because I did have a buddy one time accidentally missed one. An alligator tried to get away, and it bit him on his arm, and he took like 68 stitches. We had to bring him to the hospital that night. And I went, well, you know, I probably shouldn't be doing this as much while I'm playing baseball, you know. And so that's really how it began, and it's something that I guess has just been passed along from our fathers and probably their grandfathers before them.
Man, jumping into the water after a gator at night, okay? Yeah. Something, I tell you this, never did that growing up in Vermont, never thought about this, that would be something that I would want to do. Oh, man. Let's talk about the Orioles. They are 91-53. They're 4 games ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays in the loss column. They got a real shot to win 100 games this year. How surprised are you that they are this successful this quickly?
A little bit. You know, I think it's happened a little bit faster than most people thought it would. Obviously, the Orioles won 83 last year, won 83 and 81, and really got on the map, I would say, last year, too. And I think most experts thought the Orioles would probably back up because that is generally what happens when you kind of overachieve one year. Typically, most teams take a step back. But, you know, Buster, and I think we've talked about this before. I was in spring training, and it was almost it almost felt like in spring training with these guys that 2023 was going to be a validation year. Like they were going to go out and validate what they did last year to show everybody that last year was not a fluke and that they did have a really good team. I don't think anybody thought
we'd be talking about 91 wins this part of the season. I don't think anybody thought that. But I really thought the Orioles, in my opinion, would take a step forward and be better than 83 at the end of the year. I never saw potentially 100 or 102 games coming. But, look, it's been a pleasant surprise here in Baltimore. I mean, what can you say about it? And it's just a resilient bunch of guys. You know, everybody says, well, you don't have the 30-homer guys. You don't have the big giant pitchers and all that. But I always say the Orioles are really a sum of their parts in a lot of ways. And I explained the lineup to everybody as a chain. And that chain is long, but that chain is strong. Every link in that chain is very, very strong. And it's a lineup that's going to go out and, you know, we all throw the term around, they're a bunch of grinders and this, that, and the other, and gamers. That's really what the Orioles have, you know. And it starts with Gunnar Henderson and Rutschman and those guys towards the top of that lineup in Santander. And they just go out and perform every night. And I think it's evident what kind of team that they have. I mean, when you're tops in baseball and comeback victories, you know, not only this year, but they had a lot of them last year. They learned how to win close games last year. They're towards the top in one-run victories this year, towards the top in a lot of different things. Comeback victories, they're towards the top, too. So, and look, I'll give Brendan Hyde a lot of credit for this. He's had the pulse of this team, really. And we didn't know how good of a manager Brendan Hyde was early, right, 3 or 4 years ago when it was some rough times because everybody else was playing chess. He was playing checkers, I felt like. But now that he's got the parts to maneuver and move around, if you look at the platoon advantages, you know, righty versus lefty, he's been able to mix and match a lot. And the biggest thing for me, Buster, is hitting with runners in scoring position. I think the Orioles were 23rd last year. They're number one in baseball this year. So they perform in the big situations. And so, look, it's been fun to watch. You can't explain baseball. It's obviously one of the lowest payrolls in baseball and yet one of the best teams in baseball. But that's what makes baseball such a wonderful game.
So you know how we writers, we love our narratives. And I feel like the Orioles are set up for a narrative in the postseason. And that if they wind up getting knocked out, then you're going to have idiots like me saying, you know, they just, you know, first bite of the apple. They didn't have the experience of a team like the Astros. And if they survive it, it's going to be like, well, they have so little experience that worked in their favor. They're just going out right. And playing and not worrying about the pressure. Which way
right.
In for this team projecting for them going into October?
Well, to your point, you don't know what you don't know. And this team doesn't know it's not supposed to be doing what it's doing. This team doesn't know that it's supposed to have, you know, that you got 91 wins right now. You're not supposed to be where they are. I think they just go out and attack every game as we want to go out and win every game. We want to win every pitch. We want to win every at bat. And again, I'll give Brendan Hyde credit for this. He has kept this team looking and blinder focused on every game, not looking too far ahead, not thinking about where you are and what you're doing right now, just focus on every game. And so I hope this continues. I mean, I get worried when the postseason comes that the media and the bright lights, they get brighter. And I think that is a concern. And all of a sudden, there's a lot of reporters, a lot of different questions. And it gets this team kind of out of their groove, if you will, in some ways. But I don't know. I think James McCann and Gibson and the veteran players, Frazier, that have come over, have really blended in well. And Mike Elias, look, everything Mike Elias has touched, man, in the last 3 or 4 years has turned to gold. I mean, Danny Coulon, who saw that coming? I mean, Cano has been a huge part of this, obviously. I was the one that had my hand raised last year in the offseason going, what is Yennier Cano doing on our roster? He can't even throw the ball over the plate. Well, I was wrong in a big way. And where would the Orioles be without him, you know? And, yes, there are some concerns. When you lose Bautista, and I know he's playing catch, and they're trying to ramp him up, and we're going to see what's going to happen with him. Obviously, that's a giant loss, and you can't replace that. But, again, this bullpen is, you know, it's the number two bullpen in baseball as of today. It's really taken a step forward. It's been just as good even without Bautista. We'll see how that transpires down the stretch. But it's been a marvelous run for the Orioles, and I really think it's something that they continue. Because back to your point, I think this team is so focused. They're not going to let anything unusual kind of get in their way. That's what's impressed me so much. And one of the many things is they've had this focus from day one in spring training. It's just like blinders, those horses with those blinders on, they have been looking in this direction the whole time. It's not getting out here at all.
Well, you know better than I do that swing and miss really plays in October. You need a lot of that, especially from your bullpen, and losing Bautista, that's a big blow. But I'd say this, like if the Orioles were to face a first-round opponent like the Atlanta Braves or the Philadelphia Phillies or the Dodgers, then I would be worried for them. But obviously they don't have to, being in the other league. When I look at the American League field, You've got, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays, who absolutely devastated by injuries, and the Wander Franco not with the team anymore. You know, the Astros have had some issues with their bullpen. Seattle has been red hot of late, but or, you know, since the All-Star break generally, but they would have the same sort of experience questions maybe that the Orioles would have. The Blue Jays have taken some hits with their team. I don't look at the potential American League field as being this group of dynamic teams the way that I do the National League. Is that fair?
No, that is a fair statement. I totally agree with you. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, obviously the Astros with a ton of experience, they could take off and really get going at any second, but they really haven't, you know. And I'll take you back to this, and you know this. I don't know if your viewers, the Orioles are the only team in baseball not to be swept this year. And so yes. it's a team that has been consistent. They won a lot of first series ball games. That's how they've won so many series, trying to win their eighth consecutive series tonight against the Cardinals. And so it's just a team that's been very, very consistent. And I agree with what you're saying. I mean, when you lose Franco and McClanahan for Tampa, and yet they're still doing what they're doing. I think if you go back and look the last, 22 games, that these teams have the exact same record. Tampa continues to win. The Orioles do too. And so I love the Astros. Seattle kind of really got it going, and now they've fought a little bit. I mean, what's happened to the Texas Rangers? I mean, I don't follow it like you do, but it felt like a month and a half, 2 months ago, they had the same record as the Orioles toward the top of the American League, and all of a sudden they're fading too. So it's almost like nobody's really stepped up to say, okay, we are the best team in the American League other than the Baltimore Orioles and Tampa right now. And they're just kind of running 1-2 right now and trying to run away with this. I still love Toronto's team. I love that offense. They scare me every time we play them because I think it's an elite offense. But the truth is, it just hasn't been consistent enough throughout to get going. And of course, the Orioles have this big series coming up with the Rays starting tomorrow night, you know, a 4-game series, and it's going to be a huge series.
All right, before you go, last one for you. As someone who pitched in 211 games in the major leagues, you started 198. What'd you think of what the Mariners' George Kirby said last week when he made a reference about, you know, he kind of wishes he wasn't in the game for that that last home run? As you know, those comments got a ton of response on social media from former pitchers. I will tell you, and I said this on the podcast on Monday, I kind of, first off, he acknowledged he said the wrong thing. He, in the way that he said it, it felt like he was kind of blaming his manager a little bit, and he acknowledged that he made a mistake there. But I would also say to some of those older pitchers who I know, whether it's Jared Weaver or Roger Clemens or et cetera, that responded like, well, you know what? That's the game these days. That's how these guys are being trained as starting pitchers. What was your reaction?
Most, you know this, sometime in the heat of the battle and right after you say things that don't come out the right way that you don't mean. It was a frustration thing where I think he gave up the tie-in home run or something, you know. And so I get all that. And to people's point, too, I saw what Roger Clemens had to say. I mean, it is how we're training, unfortunately, training our pitchers these days, you know. And to be five and die. We used to call it five and die, yeah. You know. And that's kind of where we are now. Certainly it's not one of the things you want to say.
And that was a criticism, I mean, Ben. That phrase was like the person who did the five and die was sort of a weak soul.
No, that was the weak link. That was considered the weak link in your chain as your rotation because, you know, Greg Olson talks about this all the time with the Orioles when he came back the other day. He's like, we had five guys in the bullpen. We had five guys in the bullpen, Ben, when you guys were starting. But that was because me and Messina and Rick Sutcliffe were all going 6 2/3 every start, and so they didn't have to cover as much. It's different now, and I don't blame the pitcher so much as I blame where we're at. But what I don't understand, Buster, in a time that I feel like we're taking the best care and the most care, and we feel like we know more about our pitchers than ever before, it feels to me we got more and more pitchers being hurt every day. So I don't know what's right and what's wrong anymore. I thought I had it figured out. I don't know that I do now, but certainly George Kirby, he didn't. That's something he probably shouldn't have said. And when you think about it, when you're in a race and you're trying to get in the pennant race, you know, and you're trying to get into the playoffs, you want a guy that's going to be on the bump and you got to pull him out of the ball game. And so I see both sides of that argument. I feel bad about what he said because I know he took a lot of criticism for it.
All right, Ben. Always great to talk with you. I will tell you that, you know, as much as I love doing stuff outside, I will never try to jump on an alligator at night in the water. Good Lord.
Well, Buster, you never know. If you come down to Louisiana and hang out with me in the off season, maybe we have an adult beverage or two. Maybe we go try it, you know. What's the worst thing that could happen? What's the worst thing that could happen? You might get
I could
bit.
Die. That's what could happen.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. P.K. Steinberg starts off. The Orioles win Monday, eliminated the Yankees from the playoffs. So what are the first three adjectives you can think of to describe how you feel about it?
So, PK, I'm going to streamline this for you. I'm just going to say surprise, surprise, surprise.
Ooh, I like it.
Okay. It's a giant surprise that the Yankees have struggled this much. I think we all thought that the Orioles would be a good team this year and that they might make the playoffs. But I think the Yankees being, struggling as much as they have, that's been the surprise.
Yeah, for sure. Debbie Gammons Brown, DGB, writes in, this thing that happens with the Jets and Mets is worse than the curse of the Bambino or the curse of Buster. Are those things worse? Probably not.
Yes, no doubt. So? No, totally. The curse of Bambino, the curse of me, which I guess that's referring to the Philadelphia Phillies. Anytime I say the Phillies are good, they lose a bunch of games.
Right. Yeah.
Is that what she's talking about? Given that she's living in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
The Jets thing and Aaron Rodgers. My God.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's brutal.
That was crazy the other day how that happened. And for him to be out for the year. By the way, I'm going to throw in my football analysis here. When people talk about who the Jets should go and get, I think they should go trade for Ryan Tannehill. Like the Jets are too good for me to just rely on a young quarterback. If they were a developing team, I'd say, you know what, roll the dice, stick with him, no problem. But they need a good safety net. All these people are like, go get Tom Brady. Well, of course, if you want Tom Brady, he's not coming back. You know, Colin Kaepernick, he hasn't played in 7 or 8 years. No,
silly.
Ryan Tannehill, I think, is available now. He's an okay quarterback. He's someone who certainly has had experience in the playoffs. Does that make sense to you? I think that's
I love that. That's great. Someone call, where's Hembo? We need to get you on Get Up. Like, call Mike Greenberg.
Right. I actually texted that to Greeny yesterday.
Oh, look at you.
That's the guy that they should go and trade. Because we've talked about my son, Jake. He's a huge Titans fan, so I'm keenly aware of the Titans quarterback situation. They got two young guys.
Yeah.
Like, they might be ready to move on from Ryan Tannehill. I think that would be a good pickup for the Jets. I
love that. Okay, there we go. Matt Spiegel at Spiegs 1027 writes, in which Major League Baseball players are the biggest fans, baseball nerds like us, of the sport?
Okay, so the guy that I learned about this year being a huge baseball fan is Kevin Pillar. I've had conversations with him where I feel like that we could drop Kevin into a segment where you talk about like 10 favorite ballparks to 10, who are your 10 favorite players? And he would go, boom, 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 boom. In fact, we ought to do that. You know?
Yeah.
Let's do that. I think he would have fun with that.
Yeah, let's try and get him on. Next, we got Brian Stone King, our guy. He says, late, but how does Council take Burns eight innings in a no-no? Why does Burns let him? I just don't get not going after a once-in-a-lifetime chance because a professional baseball pitcher can't throw a dozen more. Manager and a player, and the player need to man up.
Brian, it's baseball in 2023. And on top of that, I think Council, I'm sure that he feels a responsibility to Burns, given that Burns' free agency is not that far off. And he's going to protect him. I mean, we've heard story. David Cone, after he threw this perfect game in 1999, which included a rain delay, was never the same. Johan Santana, 137 pitch, no hitter for the Mets, was never the same after that. I think Craig Council is going to protect the pitcher and protect his interest.
Good anecdotes there, Buster. Steve Banton writes in, hey guys, I was just wondering if you think this review's as spot on as I do, basically that winning must not be taken for granted. Bernie's Redbird review. Headline from, I don't know who Bernie Miklas is. I'm sorry, Bernie.
Bernie Miklas, yeah.
Miklas, he writes in, the headline is, the Orioles are a cautionary tale for the Cardinals. Don't take success for granted. And Bernie writes, you know, basically after winning a bunch, don't become the Orioles of the last 40 years.
Bernie's a terrific reporter. He's incredibly insightful as a baseball guy, and I would co-sign anything that Bernie writes.
There you go. Zach Beeson writes, Buster, is it possible Wander Franco was a distraction in the clubhouse? The Rays have a 667 winning percentage since he was placed on administrative leave and are way ahead of the first spot in the wild card.
You know, we talked about this when he was benched for a couple games, that it was clear that Kevin Cash, you know, took that action probably, you know, in concert is too strong, but quiet golf claps of other players on that team. I don't think there's any way he would have sat him down without understanding that it was important for him to do that. you know, in the eyes of other players on that team, which is completely separate, by the way, from this other situation that Wander Franco's in. I would say this, you get into the postseason in big games, you need great players. Wander Franco, when he's on the field, is a great player, and I think he's going to be missed.
Last one for today, Matt Hempner at Matt the Stud writes in, am I the only one who sees Artie Moreno's comments about trading Trout as an attempt to remove accountability from himself and put the pressure on Trout to get out of town? He's faking a noble knee bending to hide how poorly he runs his team.
Look, I would never ask Bob Nightingale who his source is. You know, that it's not right. And A, it's not right. And B, he would not give me the answer to that. But when I saw that report the other day, I thought that's the Angels trying to grease the skids to convince Trout to get out of town. What I don't think whoever, if in fact that's, you know, who the original source was for Bob, maybe it was like a game of telephone where someone in the Angels organization told somebody that, you know, a peer with another team who wound up telling Bob. I don't think that person understands within the Angels organization. Mike Trout doesn't have anything close to the trade value that he would have had 3 years ago. You're not going to get anything in return for Mike Trout, Taylor. I mean, did you agree with what I was saying?
Yeah.
Like, he's missed over 200 games the last 3 years, and I love Trouty.
Of course.
To me, he's one of the great players, but no team with him being owed $250 million, 32 years old, no team is going to give him anything of real value.
Do you think like they could really, they would really just like send him off for borderline nothing, you know, like
well, they'd have to give him away while eating money.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. I mean, for sure.
Oh, I
fascinating. I wonder how that, I can't wait to see how that plays out. It would be, I mean, just to see him on a new team in general, but you know, if a team's willing to come in and the Angels are willing to eat money and try and re-sign Shohei, what are they doing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think probably, you know, Artie was thinking would be like, you know what, if we move Trout, it gives us more money to go after Ohtani. I just keep hearing this week from people who are saying that Ohtani's not going back to the Angels. And I don't know what the, you know, who the source of all that is, but it is interesting that people feel like Ohtani is, there's no chance he goes back to Anaheim. We'll see.
Well, thank God they have Anthony Rendon.
Today. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank God they have Anthony Rendon. Just making an Angels joke. Sorry.
Yeah. That's it for today. My thanks to Bob Nightingale, Ben McDonald, Sarah and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.